Good morning. In the packet that was sent to the delegates for the GA, there was a letter, the New Testament use of the Old Testament narrative. Those of you who were here last year remember the conversation we had, or I should say discussion we had, and the questions from that prior to that GA and in that GA prompted the Theology Committee to want to look at that particular topic. And Pastor Ron Baines from Topsom, Maine, looked into that and with others penned the paper that you have. Its length is actually shorter than it really would have taken to handle all of the material thoroughly. But I found the paper to be unto edification to my own soul. And my plan is to seek to summarize that and to give the material to my congregation in either one or two Sunday school sessions. So I would encourage you to try to find a way to use it. There are a lot of important principles that we find therein, a lot of things that can help our people, especially as they're reading the scriptures on their own, that we can give them some guidelines and even methodology wherein they may understand those narratives better. So at this time, I'd like to ask Ron to come and make some comments about the paper, and perhaps if there are questions, he could field them as well. Thank you for your hard work, Ron, on our behalf.
Thank you. It was an honor to be asked to do the circular letter this year. I wondered why I was asked, and then I figured it was because Mike knew I had 2 years of Hebrew 1. at any rate, one of my great passions as a pastor and a preacher is to instill in people a love for the two-thirds Bible that Jesus carried. In my background, some of you may not know my history, but I actually come out of the heart of dispensationalism, Plymouth Brethrenism, and in my one-year Bible certificate, my theology professor joyfully proclaimed to one of my fellow students that he had finally found something to do with his Brown Driver Briggs Hebrew lexicon. He said it made a great doorstop. And as sad as that story is, the reality is that most folks, I think, that we bump into have no idea what to do with the Old Testament. There's some quaint stories in there to teach our kids. There are some wonderful places where we can leap to any universe we wish to go to in the ultimate postmodern sense. But how to make use of it in a way that will honor the Lord is a challenge, and I think part of that comes because it is so misused in the pulpit. I hope I've only put a few things down. As Mike said, this actually was a little bit long. I really struggled keeping it this short. I only stuck with the narrative sections, but many of the principles can apply beyond that. But there are a number of things here that I hope will be of help and encouragement to you, and just a bit of really just beginning to scratch the surface of what to do. But I cannot begin enough to encourage you to also try to pass on a passion for the Old Testament to our people. As the church goes farther and farther away from its historic Protestant roots, it's more and more confused. And what is needed is not innovation in the pulpit, but just solid exposition that Paul said would equip men for the ministry. That when Paul told Timothy that the scriptures were profitable, he was speaking of the Old Testament as much as any. So hopefully we can use them profitably in the lives of our folks. There's a number of things. I feel kind of funny standing up to go over a circular letter that most of you got and have read already. So it feels a little bit redundant and unnecessary. But there certainly are numerous examples of the abuse of the Old Testament. I thought you might enjoy this one from Baptist History by John Leland. I'll put it in a little bit of context. Some of you may not have read the letter. But John Leland was a late 18th, early 19th century Calvinistic Baptist. I wouldn't quite call him a Reformed Baptist because he kind of got thrown out of Reformed Baptist circles for being not fully Reformed Baptist. But he was accused one time by a congregational minister of not preaching extemporaneously. Apparently they thought he was sneaking notes into the pulpit with him or something, and that was somehow a slur. And one of the Baptists affirmed to the congregational minister that in fact he could. So he made a deal. The congregational minister said, well, if he will preach on any text that I select, I will let him use the congregational church. Now that was a real blessing because they were, you know, they were meeting in barns. You know, if you look at New England, John Leland was in Western Massachusetts. If you look in New England, pictures show quaint barns. I assure you, they smell like cows. So, you know, if you think it's distracting to be in some buildings, try doing it in a good old-fashioned New England barn. So the congregational minister agreed he could use the building provided he would preach on any text he chose. And as a story goes, I put it in the paper, but I'll read it to you. On turning to his text, as he mounted the pulpit, and in a good old New England church, the pulpit is up several steps. It's even higher than this. There's usually one or even two sets of steps that come up to the pulpit. So he got up to preach, and as he was climbing the steps of the pulpit, the congregational minister handed him a piece of paper on which he had written the text, and he unfolded it. And he says, on turning to it, that is his text in the Bible, he found it to read thus, and Balaam saddled his ass. And as he announced it, he said that if he had searched the Bible through, he could not have found a text more appropriate. It brings to our view, said he, three things: a prophet, an ass, and a saddle. Balaam, really pithy. Balaam the prophet, who loved the wages of unrighteousness. And he well represents the class who oppressed their fellow men. Otherwise, the congregationalists. The ass, a patient bearer of grievous burdens, represents those who are oppressed by them. Read the Baptists. And the saddle is the unrighteous exaction that is made of these downtrodden denominations. And so the teller of the story says, and the result was, that he preached a sermon that even those who liked the doctrine the least were obliged to acknowledge furnished evidence of his remarkable promptness, shrewdness, and pungency. Well, if you want to be remarkable for those things, follow in Brother Leland's steps. But I recommend to you that whatever the Baptists went home with that day in some sort of triumphalism over their congregational friends, their view of that text probably made no sense to ancient Israel. And that's where we have to be careful of, don't we? I think there are two things we want to watch out for. We want to be careful, as Jim Renahan taught my congregation a couple of years ago, you never want to preach a sermon that a rabbi could say amen to. But you also never want to preach a sermon that an Old Testament believer would find utterly nonsensical. And so we need to be faithful to the text. And God has called us to that task. It's a delightful task. It's one of the most wonderful tasks, but it is a job, a labor, and it is something we need to do faithfully to our brethren. Well, there are many things here that I could point to. I love the quote that, by the way, if you wonder when it says Ron Baines with others, all the good stuff, read others. But some quotes were sent to me by a dear brother that helped with some of this, and his statement of Spurgeon, I think, is wonderful. How dreadfully the Word of God has been mauled and mangled by a certain brand of preachers who have laid texts on the rack to make them reveal what they never would have otherwise spoken. If you turn on the radio today, I think you will find that to be about 98% true. And it's sad. You know, the current phrase of religious young folk, not unbelieving young folk or unreligious young folk, but religious young folk in America today is being popularized by the result of an extensive survey done, I believe, at Princeton University. Mike Horton has mentioned it a number of times, but it's therapeutic moralistic deism. Therapeutic means that the average young person in a church today has a view of God that he's really just some cosmic therapist. Moralism means just be good. You know, just be good. And deism means God's out there somewhere, kind of irrelevant to your everyday occurrences, unless, of course, you need the divine butler, in which case, by some means or other, some incantation, proper prayer, some sort of scrunched up faith, you can interest him in your affairs and call him in from outside. Much of the Old Testament is used to foster that misrepresented view of God. The church is going the way of liberalism, and it fascinates me because liberalism mangled the Old Testament in order to go the way of liberalism. And it's happening again in our own days. So each generation has its call before God to preach faithfully his word. Andrew Fuller said, "It is an easy thing for a man of a luxuriant imagination, unencumbered by judgment, to make anything he pleases of the Old Testament scriptures." Well, may it not be so of us, my brethren. I love to teach the Old Testament. I've taught it to my church. To bring to life the historical books for other than just stories in Sunday school classes for children is a great calling and a great task. I did want to recommend some books. Sorry, ladies, if that's the wrong thing to do. But some books that have helped me tremendously. And let me just name two authors. One is a hermeneutics text. I had to chuckle. I saw a cartoon one time. It showed an older fellow with a little kid walking down the street. And the older fellow turns to the kid and said, "So what's the word on the street?" Kid looked up at him and said, "Hermeneutics." In our postmodern day, that's true. Hermeneutics is on the front page. But Richard Pratt's book, he gave us stories. The Bible Student's Guide to Interpreting Old Testament Narratives transformed my life. Yes, it did. It transformed my life, right? My name's Ron, and I'm a dispensationalist. It's a wonderful text on rich on multiple levels of just exploring how we are to understand and interpret the Old Testament scriptures. I cannot recommend it to you enough. The second is some work by Dale Ralph Davis. Dale Ralph Davis was introduced to me by Steve Martin in his commentaries. He has written a number of commentaries on the historical books of the Old Testament that are part of the Christian Focus publishes them. I just cannot recommend them to you enough. He taught Old Testament for a while at RTS. These are absolutely phenomenal commentaries that you're not going to get a Hebrew exegesis out of it, although there you can tell he has richly explored the Hebrew text, but I would encourage you to look at him. He's written commentaries on Joshua, Judges, Kings, and Samuel, and just make rich use of those. He's also written a small book called The Word Became Flesh, How to Preach from Old Testament Narrative Texts. And if you would just consider my circular letter, the Cliff Notes version of that roughly 110 or 120 page book, I just cannot recommend that to you enough. It's just wonderful, wonderful material. God has given us a glorious task, hasn't he? The right to open his word. But it's a sober task. We shall one day be called to account for the ways in which we've done that. One of the things that I love the most is that tape players no longer exist because there are so many tapes of mine that got sent to the trash heap, rightly so. But hopefully, though we can look to the past with some measure of soberness, we can look to the future with excitement that God has given us his scriptures in which to preach to our people.